sort of how did you get here as far as your current position? I mean, I know a decent, I've read your background, but did you want to talk about it?
So I've been here for 24 years, right out of school. I went to the University of Michigan undergrad and then Wharton for business school. I met Steve Ross when I was in undergrad, sophomore year of college. Yep. And one of my professors had introduced me to him. He had just given some money to the school. I was attempting to develop student housing as an undergrad. And we hit it off at one of the conferences, and Stephen offered me a summer job. And I came here, and I guess the rest is history, right? So obviously a full-time job came after that. Recession came after that, so I went back to business school, and really spent, you know, stayed connected the whole while. And, you know, from 92 on, so that was at 89, 90, and then from 92 on, being here full time, and really, you know, watched the company, not watched, but part of the company's growth, you know, from back then. You know, personally.
How big was it when you started?
I think we had like 80 people.
So it was still a decent, it was a decent site for.
Yeah, I mean, the focus was very different. You know, Stephen's background, Stephen started the company really in affordable housing.
Right.
Which is still a very, very big part of what we do today, but it was a much bigger part of it back then.
Right.
Percentage-wise, I mean, even that business is much larger today, but percentage-wise, it was a much bigger part. And
yeah, you're better known today for more high-profile projects.
Right. Yet, well, I would say our affordable housing, you know, business remains critically important to everything we do, kind of a view and philosophy, and kind of we'll get into that, I'm sure.
Sure.
You know, so we do spend a lot of time on it, and it has grown to be a pretty large part of our business. But from back then, you know, I started really working side by side with Stephen. You know, I was fortunate kind of the way I came into the company was through Stephen, so I kind of remained attached to him through the year. And I mean, he's been a great mentor and, you know, a real visionary, I think, in the business. And, you know, to be able to start that young working with someone like that has been a terrific experience.
And Stephen's still here. I mean,
Stephen is here more than ever, so, I mean, he's certainly not nowhere near taking, you know, the change of his life. And so don't read into any of the title changes as that.
No, I didn't.
You know, it was really, I'd actually say that the opposite. It was more, you know, him realizing how large the company's gotten, and in order to continue doing, you know, now jumping forward 20 plus years.
Sure.
Kind of in order to really continue the evolution of our company and raise institutional capital and do the institutional type deals that we are doing, you know, that market demands some answers to questions, you know, that are succession planning and things like that. You know, especially, and not that Stephen's old, but he's older. And so inevitably, as you're raising, you know, the billions of dollars that we raise, that question comes up. And I think really him being able to kind of plan for that and more important, kind of groom people and spend the time and train and really grow people from within, I think speaks to, you know, if you were to ask him, probably, you know, some of his proudest accomplishments. You know, but along the years, kind of we, you know, we did everything from affordable housing to mixed income housing, 80-20 housing, for sale residential. There were times we did some hotels, we did some office buildings, we did a lot of big box and still do kind of retail development, then more kind of lifestyle oriented centers. And then a real push into mixed-use development, and that's more what you hear about us today. You know, City Place in West Palm Beach was one of our early ones. That won a ULI award. And then we did this building that won kind of all the ULI awards.
Sure. And you're working in Hudson Yards.
Hudson Yards. I mean, this building was really, you know, transformative for our company. You know, if I think back to the period of time, which was you know, mid-90s, you know, we took some pretty large incremental steps, you know, from building 80-20s, probably the largest development being, you know, $100, $120 million type development, to a building just south of here on 56 and Broadway that was the headquarters for Bertelsmann with condos on top. That was a $450 million deal. So probably three times our largest deal prior. And while we were doing that, competing for this deal, right, which ultimately is roughly $2 billion, 2.8 million square feet. So some pretty large jumps You know, and if you think back to the time, you know, were we even qualified to do this building? Probably not. I mean, I don't think anybody was really qualified. You know, it was one of the largest developments, you know, done at the time. It was the largest private construction loan ever done in this country.
Well, and that's one thing I wanted to ask you about, which ties into things like management style and philosophy of the firm. I mean, you go from one size of project to the other, growing pains with the company? Like, what did you guys, I mean, were there any substantial growing pains? Or
we always have growing pains, right? I mean, you know, and we're in a cyclical business too, right? So you have to manage that as well, right? So we just went through, you know, 3-4 of the most difficult years, right? Since I really first started, when it was kind of the 90 to 93 era, right?
Yeah.
That was my first, you know, experience, right? You know, welcome, and now you got a mess on your hands, right? Sure, not that it was my mess at the time, but I was certainly part of, you know, witnessing it at that age, and, you know, which I would say probably the last couple of years, you know, even now thinking back to what I learned back then was very helpful going through it this time. You know, I would say if you were to ask about the culture, you know, one of the things that I think we've tried very hard to do, if you think back to what the firm was 20-something years ago to where it is now, you know, I remember clearly still those days where, you know, we would sit around the table with Stephen and 2, 3, 4 other people, and, you know, we'd go over every minutiae part of the deal, you know, at a 10 o'clock meeting, you know, food around the table, and at the end of the meeting make a decision and have that implemented the next day.
Right.
And, you know, so you had that very quick, nimble, kind of entrepreneurial way of doing business. And how do you manage to keep that as your company grows from, you know, 80 people to 2,500 people, you know, in from one city to around the globe, right? And how do you continue to be able to make those entrepreneurial, quick, yet smart and educated decisions and become an institutional development company, you know, global institutional development company? And I'd say that's been the biggest challenge. And, you know, we spend an enormous amount of time on people. So you say, is it a collection of deals? I would say it's the furthest thing from that, right? It's really very much about creating a culture, creating a work environment that works, training people, teaching people, making them part of the process, delegating responsibility, because there's no possible way that you can manage what we're doing, you know, in the corner suite, as they say.
Right.
And the only way you can do as much as we're doing is by having people that you trust and can delegate to, and keeping them motivated and keeping that entrepreneurial spirit.
So what are the traits you look for when you're looking for team members? I mean, what, firm's got a different culture.
I would say we are not good at senior hires, because they typically come in with their own culture and traits. And I'd say that kind of with the exception being technical people, because that's where you do need gray hair. So construction, design, architecture, kind of there, you have to bring in those skills.
Sure.
But kind of the development guys, we like to grow kind of in-house. So almost all of our guys across the board, city to city, are people that have been here a long, you know, the people that are making decisions now, we didn't hire yesterday.
Right.
We hired them 10 years ago. They went through 3, 4, 5 deals, you know, under some real guidance, and now I'm making decisions.
And the city-to-city thing is interesting also, because, I mean, if you're doing development, everyone always thinks of development, of course, as a local business, but if you're doing development in multiple cities and you have multiple offices, how do you sort of maintain a city decor across the office?
It is definitely a local business. There's no way around it.
Right.
And I would say it's probably one of the more difficult challenges we have. You know, what we try to do is make sure that there's one of the people I just described that have kind of been through our training here, right? So, you know, 10 plus years, several deals, that kind of then becomes responsible for those offices outside or
the office.
Either goes there to see the office or is there enough that it kind of they're making sure that the related way and the related vision is being implemented there. And then that gets complemented by a local team.
Right.
Because you can't run those offices without local people. You cannot run Chicago, L.A., Abu Dhabi from New York. I mean, again, that doesn't work. And you have to be able to get good, qualified people in place. And, you know, I would say smart, young, and hungry, right, are much more important to us than you know, 20 years of development experience at XYZ, you know, competitive development firm. Because, quite honestly, nothing we do here is rocket science, right? It's more about the people that are executing, the vision, the thought process, the loyalty, kind of good characteristics, the community involvement, the give back, kind of all of that is what kind of makes a development company successful.
Hmm. So here's a question. You obviously, you know, senior level people in a development firm often find themselves with they're basically managers at the end of the day. And you're still involved in the development process, but you're also managing a lot of people. Where'd you learn how to manage? Because you've been in the same shop now for 20 plus years. So was it looking to Stephen and saying, you know, I'm going to manage like him? Were there other people who influenced your management style? Everyone's got their own way of managing the company.
You know, you learn it as you go, right? I mean, first of all, we all love the development process, so we try not to get so far from it that we're not doing development anymore.
That's not like running a chemical company.
Right, because that wouldn't be as much fun anymore. So I wouldn't say I wouldn't describe my job as just that. You know, I probably spend half my time on people. And so that includes creating, you know, trying to cultivate new future stars, mm-hmm. and also kind of overseeing people that are in place in various offices now, and the other half kind of truly on, you know, doing what we love doing, you know, on development deal. You know, and I think, you know, how do you learn? You know, I think, you know, you go by your gut and you try to do things the right way, and you treat people fairly. You let them participate, you know, in the success of the deal.
Yeah, I just ask because it's always interesting to me, because when you look at the development business, still is to a certain extent unique when you look at other industries, because a lot of other industries, you know, you'll have a car company which will say, well, we need a new CEO, and they'll hire, you know, someone from the airline industry, and they'll say, well, it's all just management. At the end of the day, we're just building stuff and selling stuff.
Yeah, I don't think that works there.
No, and I'm not saying it does,
right.
But it's interesting because the real estate development business is one of the few businesses left that say, unless you're a real estate person, you shouldn't be in a C-level position. Whereas a lot of other industries will say, well, your 20 years of experience in the airline industry, you know, we can transfer it over. And that's just me personally being in.
No, I agree. I don't think you could pull a. That's what I said. I mean, we are not good at senior level hires. I don't think you can pull, you know, a Coca-Cola president and bring them
and say run the company.
Run the company, right?
Right.
I think you could bring a Coca-Cola marketing person into real estate.
Sure. And you could bring a new head of accounting.
And you could definitely bring a
technical skill,
right? But I think in development is. I mean, it's literally, it takes over your life. It's not just a job, right? I mean, it's everything that we do, right? It's you know, the city involvement, the community involvement, the nonprofits you associate yourself with. I mean, it really is part of, it's your friends, it's your social circle.
I've always thought, and this is just my own two cents, and I don't even know if this will end up in the tape or the interview, but my the only other industry I've ever thought that runs even remotely like our industry is the movie business. Because the movie business, it's the same sort of thing where if you've seen a movie company, the few times a movie company's been bought by, like, large conglomerates,
they fail.
They screw it up. Because at the end of the day, if you don't make a good movie, just like if you don't build a good building, worrying about all the management issues in the world, it's just meaningless. Anyway, okay, so as far as direction of the firm, I mean, I guess I always like to start this with just, you know, we're in the crisis. One question just to throw out there. You know, how do we, and this, just to start the conversation, how do we know when the crisis is over? Like, what to you as someone in the development business will tell you the crisis is now crossed the line?
Who's going to be the next president? That's the first question.
Okay, well, we're a month away.
Look, I mean, you start to feel it, right? I mean, the question is, I mean, the real thing was now it's somewhat more evident, and that is really city by city, because I don't think that's true across the whole country that we're in recovery, right?
Sure.
I think it almost goes without saying, in New York, I would say pretty much people are saying things are better than they were, and things are getting better.
People have jobs.
People have jobs. Economy's a little stronger. you know, the hard thing is to do is to spot that 18 months ago, right? Because that's where the bargains were.
Mm-hmm.
There are no bargains today,
mm-hmm.
right? So that's a little bit more difficult. I mean, the hardest thing to do is, you know, when things are bad, is figure out how they're going to get good. And when things are good, you know, how do you figure out when they're going to get bad? Right? That's the hardest thing to do. And, you know, you got to really work hard on that. You've got to keep your, you know, eyes open, your ears to the ground, and you're trying to figure that out.
So assuming we're moving into the zone, I guess the question then would be...
I would say something slightly different.
Yeah.
You know, we don't necessarily consider ourselves investors into macro trends.
Okay.
Right, and I think that's also very different than a lot of different firms, right? I mean, we are first and foremost a development company. We have a large fund management business, but even in the fund management business, everything we do is about kind of creating value at the asset level, right? And so that we operate kind of in a micro environment, right? So we don't invest because we think things are getting better, you know, and they're going to be the thing we're doing now that we are buying at market is worth, you know, two times market later. Right? We're doing something because we're creating value in the development process. So, you know, we buy land, we add development, and we're in there at a basis that is less than market today.
Right.
So we don't develop because we see something like this. We invest through our funds because maybe there's distressed opportunities and our basis is good. And we get those deals because we have a certain set of skills that others don't. The development process and create value that way, and the same goes for development. Even Hudson Yards, right, which you know by far is the largest thing we've done. It's the largest development you know in the country.
It's the largest anyone's done. It's mammoth.
Right? Yes, it's 15 million square feet of everything: you know, office, retail, residential, schools, cultural facilities, parks. But if you really sit down and analyze what's happening today on that deal, and we're leasing office space. You know, our first stage is 4 million square feet of office space. Everyone, just about everyone that we're talking to, tenant-wise, is a result of a micro opportunity. Right? Even in not the best of times, leases do expire. People have to make real estate decisions. Right? So if you were to look at the profile of every one of our tenants, it's, you know, XYZ big company. They're in 3, 4, 5 different locations throughout the city. And leases are expiring, and they're saying, hey, I can consolidate all to one place. I could take 70-80% of the square footage I have before. I could have brand new efficient, you know, buildings, green technology, you know, efficient spans, whatever it is, right? And maybe I pay a little bit more per foot, but my total occupancy cost will probably come down. And so, you know, I view that as a micro opportunity, right? We were able to tie up land at a good price, at a good basis. We were able to hang on to it through a cycle. And now lease it, not necessarily because the New York market is getting better, but because we've created a good product in this environment.
Right. So you became basically the status of the market matters less just because you're in for such a good price.
Right. Now, it's always great when the wind is at your back and we're going to do better if the market gets better. And, you know, New York has been good to us in that way because if you look at over any, you know, 25-year period of time, you could have bought anything and done nothing and made money. Right. But hopefully when things go the other way, all those things I just said, you know, benefit you.
So a couple other questions then, just as far as the firm as it grows, sort of the vision, really two last questions I have just off the top of my head, and then I'll see if there's anything else on my list. Vision for the firm, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, as the company moves forward into the recovery, what kind of projects do you want to be doing? Where do you want the firm to be growing?
I mean, 3 years, I could probably outline, you know,
the project,
where
we're
going to be, right?
Okay, so 10 years.
So
exactly.
I would say, but big picture, you know, it's really, you know, our view to become kind of globally, you know, the best development company in the world. And, you know, I think in order to do that, you need to be in kind of a large urban market, and you need to be developing large, impactful, city-changing developments, and that's really where our focus is. You know, we'll always have a bias to New York because we're here,
One of the markets.
It's also one of the, you know, it's also kind of a marquee stage for the rest of the world.
Sure.
So doing what we do here helps everything else.
Mm.
You know, when we finish this development, you know, we get calls from around the world, come build us a Time Warner Center, you know, in Shanghai or wherever it was.
Sure.
You know, and then, by the way, we want to call it Time Warner Center too, right? You know, but this, as I started to say, this project was very transformative for our company. You know, it really took us to the next level, and the awareness of our company was heightened tremendously. And Hudson Yards will do that times five. And so, you know, what we see coming out of Hudson Yards is more of those calls, more of those opportunities around the world. And, I think, in the States, we're in the cities that we're in on purpose, not by accident. We think those are the growth cities. Our core has always been vertical, urban high-rise. We're not going to deviate from that, right? So we're not going to do garden apartments in Kansas. Nothing wrong with Kansas, but that's not
what we're doing. But it's not your thing, sure.
So if you look at vertical urban markets, there's not that many, surprisingly, actually, right? So you've got, New York, Chicago, L.A., kind of, San Francisco, Boston and Washington, right? There's not much more.
Right.
And of those cities, we're really only not in Washington. So, expansion-wise in the U.S., that's probably the only city, we probably should be in that we're not.
And then globally?
Globally, we're in Shanghai, São Paulo, and Abu Dhabi. So we cover, China, the Middle East, and Brazil.
Right.
China has been very, very difficult for us, quite honestly. We've not had the success that we would have liked there.
Culture, regulatory issues,
yes.
Economy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very difficult environment for foreigners. Not as welcoming as, I wouldn't say that you'd expect, because you almost expect that it's not welcoming, but
sure.
More difficult to overcome than even we would have thought.
Then say São Paulo.
São Paulo is a kind of full capital society. If you're good and you have capital, welcome.
Sure. Sure.
And that is definitely not the case in China.
And Abu Dhabi?
Well, Abu Dhabi is more opportunistic. And it's not just Abu Dhabi. It's really Middle East, but based on Abu Dhabi. We brought in a group of investors into our company in 2007, which includes some sovereign funds, and Mubadala is the sovereign fund of Abu Dhabi. They are a partial owner of our company here. And they have some pretty large-scale projects going on there, and they invited us to become their partner. So, would we do ground up, buy a piece of land, and do a development in Abu Dhabi? Probably not. But with the right partner, like we have, and in the right environment, we're developing what will ultimately be almost 2 million square feet of retail in the middle of where they are building the Rosewood, Four Seasons, residential, the Abu Dhabi Stock Exchange, 4 office towers, huge, huge development, centrally located to everything, and this will become the largest retail center in Abu Dhabi. So, that's an opportunity that we're able to jump on, and we have a great partnership there with a private equity firm called Gulf Capital. We formed a company called Gulf Related. And through that, we now have a venture in Saudi Arabia as well, where we're doing compound housing, mainly for expats. So it's very kind of opportunistic, deal by deal. There could be some interesting things there.
Interesting. Okay, well, I've covered a few questions I wanted to go through. We've got about 20, 25 minutes of tape. Any last thing? I always look over to PR and marketing.
Did I miss anything? Or anything that I wasn't supposed to say?
Did you say anything, Miranda? I didn't hear anything in that scale. So.
Maybe just touch on, you talk a lot about the mixed use, maybe just some of the other pieces the company is doing, Equinox.
Right. So we've also, along the way, as I started to say, so we got into all these different asset classes, but we also got into some corporate transactions. We bought Equinox, which today has become one of the most successful health clubs, across the country. Very similar market, very similar demographic for what we do on the real estate side. A lot of cross synergies. We spent a lot of time growing that business, and
it's very dependent on real estate for growth, so it's really worked out well.
Sure.
We bought Virgin Megastores when there were still records to be sold. We bought it because they had great real estate. We shut down the business, and we wound up with a lot of their real estate. So that was more of a corporate real estate play, but we operated the record stores.
It's like what it is. It's like what they did with Alexander's years ago.
Correct. We formed a joint venture with Danny Meyer to do restaurants and catering, which will provide that, you know, restaurants for us in our large scale developments as part of what we do at Hudson Yards. Steven obviously bought the Miami Dolphins, so that's become a big venture in and of itself.
High profile.
High profile, nothing else. And it's, that's also, raised our profile, I think, here. It's amazing, the focus on football around this country.
No, I when I was preparing for the interview, I read one of the articles on the website, which was, I guess it was you had gone to Michigan, and it was like the school paper or something, and there was the series of the comment made in the, I don't know if it was you or Stephen made some comment about that the only surprising thing about talking to the students was how many questions were just about science.
Just about football.
Yeah. But not surprising. Not surprising. Okay. Good.